Welcome to episode 111 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution, Coronation Street. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Michael.
And this week, we'll be discussing the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 25th and the 29th of August, 2014. I'm surprised I made it through that paragraph.
Why?
Because I'm so weak with hunger.
Oh, we're on a diet.
We're on a diet.
We're 3 days in, living hard.
We had a nice holiday, a bit too nice, so we've decided to have a food budget.
It's proper diet as well. It's packets of powder mixed with water.
It's
for
not,
every meal.
It's not fun.
It's alright, there's some few nice things.
It's not as ridiculous as it sounds. Some people eat packets anyway, just for no
getting
reason.
Used to it.
But we've discovered, this is gonna offend our Canadian listeners.
Oh yeah.
We've discovered calorie free maple syrup.
I don't think it's genuine stuff.
I don't think it's real. It came today and we are already plotting pancakes.
Yeah. The cheap, low-calorie pancakes, they're part of
part of our diet.
It is packet and water.
Don't worry, everybody. We are not going to break our diet for some no-calorie
maple syrup.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what we've been up to this week.
What have you been doing?
How about you? Watching Coronation Street?
Let's listen.
Let's listen to what?
Oh, they're saying, shut up. Oh, that's cool. Anyway, Corrie history. 30 years since Victor Pendlebury crashed Mavis and Derek's engagement party.
The cad.
Oh.
He was okay. Mavis's ex-lover.
I just had a very visual representation of that in my mind where he was literally driving a car into it.
No.
It's much more exciting in my head. 20 years since the first appearance of Fred Elliott.
Yeah, I'll look at you as you got to the end of that sentence, you suddenly cheered up.
Alf and Audrey go on a black pudding contest in France.
I don't remember watching that, but it's quite famous.
I'm surprised
quite
it's not on YouTube.
I can't believe that 20 years since Fred Elliott started. I can't even believe how long it's been since he's been dead. I think it was like 2006 or something he died, so it's almost been 8 years. In my head, he still hasn't been dead for that long.
No, me too.
He's lived on in our hearts.
Yes, worrying.
Yeah, but good old Fred. We've also had 10 years since... here's another classic moment. Sorry, I'm also rediscovering this because I wrote it a few days ago. 10 years since Jack Duckworth dressed up as Ida Fagg to help the Rovers all-female bowls team win a match.
Now, I remember watching this and being offended that it was supposed to be funny.
It was funny. It was hilarious.
Oh, I don't like it.
It was all right. He had Hayley helping him, so it was like...
It's so offensive that it I just found it offensive.
It's Corrie humour at his best, I say. And what was funniest was that, didn't he, in the final, he was up against somebody else, and then he discovered that she was actually a transsexual or something.
Yeah.
One of his old drinking mates had turned into a woman.
I don't remember.
Funny stuff.
It was one of those ones where they skimmed a bit too close, like the time when Steve went abroad and found a... transsexual, whatever.
And oh yeah, transvestite.
Just awful.
Yeah. And 5 years ago, since Ramsay Clegg left Weatherfield, having been shunned by half brother Norris.
This is quite a good week. All these things, apart from the first one, are interesting.
Yeah, that Ramsay Clegg storyline was good. That was
who was it
that played him? It was old Manuel, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've forgotten his name.
Sasha.
I'm sorry.
Something.
I don't remember.
That was probably the last storyline that Norris had as well.
Yeah, it was a really good one.
Yeah.
And I kind of, in the way, I would have preferred it to have had a happy ending.
It had a really sad ending.
It was really tragic, and it was kind of good that they didn't cop out and try to make Norris into somebody that he wasn't.
Yeah, because what we haven't said in here is that Ramsay had a brain tumour and died on the plane home.
Yeah, sorry.
tragic.
And it also was an interesting issue about the children who had been evacuated to... Australia, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And abandoned, basically, by their family. And Norris was kind of still held a grudge for some reason.
Yeah, because I didn't think we knew very much about Norris's backstory before, apart from, we heard about his marriage with Angela and everything, but nothing about his childhood, I don't think. So, yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
It's also 30 years this week since the death of Bernard Ewins, who played Stan Ogden, legendary Coronation Street character. And 30 years ago, the episode of Corrie was delayed because of a tribute show.
Aww.
Sad stuff. Shall we move on to happier things? This week is Coronation Street.
So exciting.
Let's do Street Talk.
Yeah.
Okay, so in this week's Street Talk, we've got six storylines to mull over. Tycoon Todd takes a turn this week, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Almost carried on the alliteration there. Thought that was quite exciting. Tyrone falling through the roof. The storyline seems to
it's
be
so
kind of...
It's so sad that he died.
No, he didn't
die. I saw it on the front of a magazine.
What did it say again?
Something about Tyrone's dead.
Yeah, I think just trying to sell you the magazine there.
Didn't work. I didn't buy it, suckers.
No. Yeah, the storyline seems
That's
to be.
That's probably why I don't know many of the details.
Yeah. Picking up pace quite nicely at the moment. It's turned a bit more interesting. I'm enjoying watching that at the moment. We also had a bit of Barlow in the Big House.
Yes, we did.
Well, it was partly to do with Peter and his alcoholism, which also took a turn for the worst of today. But also a bit about Jim getting visited by Liz and that.
Mad Max. Yeah.
Mad Max on Monday this week, but we haven't seen anything about it since then.
And also, Luke and Katie are getting closer together, and you've decided to call this Luke-Katie. But I think it should be called Cake.
Have it the other way around.
Yeah.
That's just confusing. That was gross today in the camper van.
I'm glad that they obviously had to think long and hard about how to... not to shake the van backwards and forwards.
They were shaking the van backwards and forwards.
It wasn't, let's face it, could have been worse.
Oh, it was horrible. Nobody likes Luke or Katie, do they? she just sunk lower in my estimation. I don't know who'd get worse than Ryan.
Aww.
Actually, no, he's not that bad, but I'm not looking forward to the storyline carrying on particularly.
I don't mind it actually, because I quite like Steph's reaction, like, Grace.
Oh yeah, well, Steph's the saving grace.
Steph is basically acting as the viewer in this and just coming out and saying, no, we find this repulsive.
Yeah.
Julie you haven't thought of that.
She should go on our crash diet. No, she's not. No, oh no, actually.
Oh dear.
She's not worried
There's
about her weight, is she?
Absolutely nothing wrong with being happy with how you are. And I think if I look like Julie, I'd be quite happy.
Julie is looking relatively slim at the moment, doesn't she?
I've always thought she had a nice figure anyway. And it's not about how much you weigh, though. It's about how big your waist is compared to your boobs.
Well, she...
You don't have to worry about this.
No. I don't know whether the story is going to go down just her at the gym and her keeping fit, or whether there seems to be some kind of dev romance.
There's something to do. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
There definitely seemed to be at the end, didn't there?
And the final storyline is the Overs return. Michael, explain the pun for people that might not
return.
Know about cricket.
Well, I don't know anything about cricket, but I do know how to look on Wikipedia for cricket terminology and overs. Rovers. I don't even know what overs are anymore. It's something to do with the score. But I don't know. It's a cricketing term. So the overs return.
Cricketing, you know. If you don't know, then don't worry about it.
British sport that we all enjoy so much.
Yes, we love it.
But we've got a little bit to say about that.
It takes 5 days to play it. It's spiffing.
I don't know. I do not know. So, Tycoon Todd, it was all about the loft extension this week, wasn't it? We didn't get to see any more of Todd's shady business deals. In fact, it wasn't so much about Todd that it was about Tyrone and Jason feeling very guilty. But he comes around to do the loft on Monday.
Jason does. Todd's annoyed that he's doing it for cheap. And Tony tells Liz that he doesn't trust Todd and he's keeping an eye on him. So the first episode of this week was basically everyone knew that something was going to happen.
Viewers.
Yeah, the viewers knew something was going to happen.
There was a bit of foreshadowing.
So they had the tension of when is it going to happen? And of course we all know when something dramatic is going to happen in Coronation Street. It's going to be at the break. So Jason's up in the loft and Tyrone's talking about how Jack and Vera will be so excited. And
oh, they had that little glow up picture, didn't they?
That
was a nice throwback.
And then they make it, a dent is made when Tyrone knocks the toolbox off the stepladder, which will become very important later on. So Jason's left Tyrone still listening to the music through his headphones.
He was trying to tell Tyrone, like, oh, don't go up there. And
yeah,
Tyrone's,
don't go up
isn't
there.
He cooking dinner or something? And he's not particularly interested. I don't really understand what the point of having the headphones was.
No,
he still did hear Jason say, don't go up there.
Well, he knew not to go up there, but he decides to go up the stairs to take a photo for the girls, and he's actually doing a video because Fizz said that they needed to take before and after photos so the girls could see it. So he decides to climb up the ladder to take a better angle, and then he falls off. He does some quite good shaking acting, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think it was
from the Tina McIntyre falling off a building school of acting.
He falls straight through the floor into the bedroom below, which was secretly filmed in Rory's roles. Yeah. Don't tell anyone. And he is knocked unconscious.
That was the first time we got to see Fizz and Tyrone's bedroom.
What did you think of it?
It kind of suits their style. It was a bit
messy.
Yeah,
and
basically.
And slightly hippie-ish.
It was a bit like just a mishmash of random
It looks like most people's real bedrooms, let's face it. Everyone's bedroom's a bit of a mess, unless you're rich and you live in a fancy house.
Yeah.
Which we don't.
But yeah, it was filmed inside the Roy's Rolls building, because there's a cool little making of on ITV.com, so if you haven't been to see that, go and have a look at that, because it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, and it's not too long.
No.
This is how I like them.
So this was like a little flashback to me, because I remember when Ken fell through Nick and Leanne's bedroom ceiling a couple of years ago.
I can't imagine him doing that. We talked about
when in our feedback section a few weeks ago, but he landed on the bed and Tyrone missed. So
he did a bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right, so after the break we come back to see Eva is trying to convince Jason to stay longer at the pub, but fortunately he cannot be tempted because he said he's got to finish the job. Because as we all know, it was bank holiday on Monday,
so
the English people had a day off.
Yes,
so
Jason.
And that is when you do DIY, which is what Jason was doing. So he goes back to Tyrone's house, finds the stove still bubbling away, goes upstairs and finds Tyrone covered in rubble. Oh no!
Oh no! But he comes around and he calls for Luke. Luke's out on the street with Katie and he comes around and Tyrone comes and he's like, ooh, there was lots of...
Ow!
Yeah.
I think I might have a fractured rib and a broken wrist.
Something like that. So he gets carted off into hospital, basically, doesn't he? With, of course, everyone involved coming out to have a look at what's happening. Todd's looking the most worried because he knows it's kind of down to him.
Well, he sneaks into the house and Gary's trying to call him. He goes to survey the damage and Gary eventually turns up and accuses Todd of basically being to blame. It is his fault because of the dodgy materials. And Todd tells him to keep his mouth shut.
Still, I'm surprised it took Gary so long to confess, because who...
What has he got to gain from this now? The only reason he was basically charmed out of saying anything to Jason, because Todd said, oh, you don't need to check, I've already sorted it out. If you question me, I will sack you.
Yeah, which I still don't know whether he's actually got the power to do.
No, well, it doesn't matter. You just need to believe that he's got the power, don't you?
Yeah. So we get to see them at the hospital later, Fizz. She's waiting to hear the news. The kids are staying at Roy's. A couple of times this week, Ruby and Hope have stayed over at Roy's house. Now, I could understand this happening when Hayley was still around, but I don't think that Roy's actually capable of...
I wouldn't want my kids to hang out with Roy, because I don't know what he'd do with them.
Well, I mean,
he'd end up trying to teach them opera.
I just feel sorry for Roy, and
yeah,
I don't know how well he'd be able to look after them on his own.
I don't think he'd be very good at it.
I know, and he's got a bit of a cafe to look
I
after.
Want to
What's
look
wrong
after
with Emily?
I couldn't look after people's kids if they gave them to me. I wouldn't know what the bloody hell to do with them.
No.
it's like CBeebies? I don't know, when is that on?
Well, Roy probably has got some more educational things to show them on the telly.
Exactly.
Anyway, so they're over there, and the doctor comes back and says that Tyrone has got a broken wrist, two broken ribs, and lung contusions.
Oh, God.
I don't know what that is.
Don't worry, though, he'll be all right.
Yeah, he seems to be okay. He's going to have an operation. So over at the Rovers, Tony's telling Eileen and Eva that he can't understand how it happened because it was all properly boarded up.
Oh, it's nothing to do with us.
Tyrone comes around and he's like, oh, I'll be okay. She feels guilty. Basically, everyone's feeling guilty about this.
Yeah.
And Todd's the only one who actually deserves to.
Todd's trying to tell Jason to keep...
Stum, still.
To tell Gary to keep... quiet.
Oh yeah,
Todd's trying to tell Gary to keep
Todd
quiet,
in the notes.
And he says he can't lie about it. Then Tony turns up and Gary confesses, unfortunately, to the wrong person, because Tony already knows about this. So Tony shouts at Todd, sends Gary home, tells him not to say anything, and Todd tries to then blame Tony to his face, saying, you told me to cut corners, it's not my fault, I don't understand about building. And he says, look, people are going to know when they come to check it out. And I don't care about you, I care about Jason. So if it's down to it, I'm going to basically send you under to save Jason's neck.
It was quite nice to see Tony actually supporting his son for once, because so far in the business, it's been almost Todd and Tony versus Jason, the good, honest builder.
Yeah, but it's really obvious that Tony... I think it's really good, because it gives him another... facet to his character, because usually villainous characters really don't have motivation other than oh, I want to be evil.
Yeah.
Whereas he actually wants to protect Jason, which is quite interesting, and I hope they do more stuff with that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad that Gary does confess in the end, because I was thinking that it might be dragged out for the whole week, but the fact that it happened in the same episode, nice bit of pace to
it. Keep it going.
Yeah. So we then move on to Wednesday, where we find out that Tyrone is going to be out of work for 8 weeks.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. He can't pay the bills or anything.
No.
Luke's having problems at the garage, isn't he? So I think Kevin is going to probably end up coming back before Tyrone is able to get back to work. But is Luke going to have to take somebody else on? I mean, was he going to have to train up Maddie to look after cars? I don't know. But, yeah, things aren't looking particularly good. I don't know how the garage is supposed to get through this particularly.
Well, I thought it was a bit weird that they're saying they got to claim on Jason's insurance. Doesn't he have any kind of facility to pay himself if he gets sick? Isn't statutory sick pay a government thing?
I don't know. I don't understand.
I just think it's weird because, I don't understand, because when I was self-employed, it was very, it was just part-time, so I didn't really need to worry about all of this stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. What else do we have? Jason asking Gary about what happened and why the roof caved in. Says people don't just fall through ceilings.
He knows something's going on. Gary says, oh, don't blame yourself. And Tony says, oh, don't worry about this so much that you ruin the business and put other people out of work, blah, blah, blah. So he goes to visit Tyrone in hospital along with Chesney. And Tyrone's really upset because he's just come around from his op and he's miserable and in pain. And he's worried about not being out of work. And Jason confesses that he hasn't slept because he's so worried. Tyrone wants to let it all go, but Fizz continuously throughout the rest of this week is just worrying and harping on about what they're going to do about money, what they're going to do about money. Jason says, oh, I'm going to sort it out, but obviously that doesn't mean anything. If Fizz has got food to put on the table, yeah, what's she going to do?
Jason has turned into such a decent bloke, hasn't he?
Yes, hasn't he? And I kind of annoyed a bit about Tyrone because he basically lets everyone... He basically doesn't seem to really believe Fizz when she's sitting there with all the paperwork going, I think we're in trouble. And he's like, I don't even know how much anything costs. Ha ha ha. Don't worry about it. Like, no, you can't tell me not to worry about it if you don't know the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Fizz is like obviously the one that's Fizz holding everything together. Yeah. So Todd has got a plan that they're going to go and sneak in and replace the boards. I don't know how
are you going to smash a board and put a new board in?
Yeah, is that? I don't know whether he probably thought it through.
No, he didn't really, did he? Gary and Tony say you're absolutely mad, and then Jason comes along as they're talking and says, oh, but I'm going to put a claim on my insurance to cover the cost of the lost earnings and also to redo the job. And Tony says, oh no, you can't. Jason thinks he's talking about the premiums going up, but then it comes out, Todd confesses and says that the boards are the wrong specification, but then immediately blames Tony and says it was his fault because Tony told him to cut corners. Jason says, look, both of you are to fault here. I knew that I couldn't trust you, Todd. Tony told me not to sack him. It's both of your fault. I'm going to go off and tell Tyrone. He doesn't get very far though. He ends up in the pub and gets completely drunk. Todd finds him and says, Jason says, oh, I'm not going to tell Tyrone after all, but this is still terrible. Todd tries to say, oh, I was only doing it for you, Jason. I still feel so bad about this. And eventually Todd just leaves because he's not getting anywhere with Jason, is he?
No. Do you think that Tyrone and Fizz are going to find out the truth at some point from Jason, I guess?
I don't know why they don't just say. Why don't they just say to him, look, this has gone really wrong. What are they going to do? Go to the police? They're not going to go to the police, especially considering Tony's offering to give them money.
Fizz is the weak link, isn't she?
Yeah. The moral sticking point here. She probably would be annoyed, but I think Jason would talk her around because Tyrone would, because he owns his own business the same as Jason does. And he knows that if something like that happened in his business and he was facing the end of his company and never being able to work in that field again versus, I mean, what's the point really of lying to them and trying to make up excuses?
Yeah. I think that probably...
Oh, I know why. It's for the drama.
I think that probably Tyrone's going to find out, but he's going to try and keep it from Fizz or something, because if she finds out what's happened, she's going to get right on her high horse. But although Tyrone can kind of snap sometimes, kind of like he did with the Maria situation. He got pretty...
shirty.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I don't think he would with Jason. But...
No, I think he wouldn't. I think because Jason's told him that he feels really bad about it and everyone hates Todd anyway, so...
Mm. So what did we have today then? Tyrone coming out of hospital. Jason confronts an apologetic Gary in the Rovers. Everyone's still kind of feeling sorry for what's happened.
Well, the turning point really comes when Jason confesses to Eva what's happened.
Yeah, because he's basically spending the whole episode looking very distracted and she spots it.
That was the main point that started everybody talking. Tony and Todd find out that Eva knows. But meanwhile, Fizz is saying, no, we can't possibly do this. We need to go to claim on Jason's insurance. Don't worry about it. That's what it's for.
Mm.
Let's go round there. So they both go round there as Tony, Todd, Eva and Jason are all arguing about this new revelation that Eva's just found out about. Tony's saying they'll never get the insurance money because of this. Todd's saying we need to stall him. We need to convince him that the insurance is going to take too long.
Even Eva is on his sort of in agreement with that in the end, isn't she? She's like saying, look, Jason, we need to...
Well, that comes a bit... the best. That comes a bit later, I think. But yeah, in the end, they're all in agreement. So Fizz and Tyrone come round. Fizz says they need to talk about the accident. And really, Jason and Tony kind of head her off at the pass by saying, oh, don't worry, everything's going to be fixed. I'll return your deposit. I'll redecorate the bedroom. And she's like, well, it doesn't really matter because we've got bills and it's just easier to claim on the insurance. And Tony's like, oh, it's too many bills, too much paperwork. Don't worry about it. It's too much. It'll take too long. I'll help you out. And Fizz is like, how are you going to help me out? And Tony says, I'll give you £1,000. Don't make any hasty decisions, which immediately would send your alarm bells ringing.
Well, yeah, that sounds totally dodgy.
Yeah. So when they leave... Jason says to Todd, I'm going to sack you now. And Tony says, if you do that, everyone will know something dodgy is going on. We need to stick together for the time being. And then just try to keep them away from the insurance company. And Jason's like, yep, fine. But when everything's finished, you two, Tony and Todd, are out of my business because you've just wrecked it. Stand up for yourself.
Do you think that that's what's going to happen? Are they going to leave in the end?
Tony's going to wheedle his way back in. I don't know.
I'm still not sure how long Tony is viable as a character for in the programme.
I like him.
Do you?
Yeah. I think because Owen's not really doing much at the moment, we need like a villainous builder, don't we?
He's been more interesting this week. I'm quite enjoying the story, but I don't know. If I was Jason, he obviously should get rid of them, but he's probably just going to kind of forgive them all in the end.
I know he will, because he's soft touching, isn't he?
But I can't see Todd working at the garage forever. Not the garage, I mean the builder's yard forever.
No, he'll get bored, really, and leave.
Yeah, it might end up being Jason.
He'll probably screw him over when he goes as well, because you're supposed to give notice and everything. He'll probably just bugger off one day and not turn up.
Mm, yeah. But that was quite a good storyline this week. I enjoyed that.
Quite exciting, yeah.
Quite good.
It had stunts.
Yeah, always appreciate a stunt on Coronation Street.
Right,
Barlow,
so
big house.
There wasn't very much on Monday. It was just Steve in a bad mood because he's had this visiting order from Peter to go and see him, and he doesn't know whether to go or not. And he doesn't really want to talk to Liz and Michelle about it either.
Michelle seems very keen that Steve go for somebody, considering that Peter supposedly killed
Tina.
Tina, she's like, because
I don't know. I think she knows Peter, and I think she knows that, I mean, Steve. And Steve's quite soft-hearted, and he probably would feel bad if he didn't go to see him in the long run. Because they don't know if he did it. I just don't know what they think.
Well, they've all decided that he did now. I mean, Ken's the only one that thinks that he's innocent, but
yeah.
I was just surprised that she was pushing him so much. I know she hated Tina and everything, but anyway.
Well, on Wednesday, Steve has decided to go to see Peter. So he goes in there and Peter's like, oh no, there's no real reason I want to see you. I just wanted to see a friendly face. How's everything going? Steve's like, no, why do you want to see me? What is it? It must be something in particular.
Hmm.
And so Peter confesses that it's Jim.
Yeah, who'd have thought? I thought this was quite a good scene. Simon Gregson doing serious acting for a change, because usually there's some element of comedy in whatever scene he's in, whether it's at the cab office with Lloyd and Eileen, or whether it's getting sort of henpecked by Michelle. And this is a more serious side to him.
Exactly.
He's having no part in sort of Peter's charade, is he?
No.
I thought it was good. But he says that Jim told him to get lost, so he doesn't like him anymore. He's like, no, I don't want to see Jim.
He basically says he rejected me, so I'm rejecting him. He lost his son years ago. And Peter's like, oh, well, what would you do if he died? And so Steve obviously thinks that he is dying. And he says, oh, you look worried, didn't you? He's not dying, but the fact that you were worried means you should give him a second chance.
Mm.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I agree with that Steve is so dismissive of seeing Jim, because thinking back to when Jim did disown Steve or whatever it was a few years ago, he was just kind of in a mood because Liz hadn't come to see his trial, and he's not been mentioned since. They've still got the pictures of Jim up on the mantelpiece. Yeah. It's like they haven't wiped him out of their lives completely. Why do they have that picture of Jim in his army uniform on the mantelpiece? They must still have sort of feel something for him. And I
do think he's being very dismissive, because you would just sort of forgive him, wouldn't you? Because you don't have to see him. He's in prison. It doesn't matter to you.
Everyone on Coronation Street has sort of told people they don't want to see them ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he tells Liz and Michelle that he's told him to stick it. So Liz confides to Michelle that she thinks Jim is up to something. Don't underestimate how much Jim can manipulate Steve. And so she's going to go to visit Jim herself to lay the ghost to rest once and for all.
Yeah, well, I was quite surprised by how it turned out on Friday in the end, because I was expecting a bit more of a spark between them.
A reunion.
And there was a spark.
She's obviously still for Tony,
isn't
she? Well, go on then, tell us what happened on Friday.
Well, she's getting herself made up to...
She does look the part, doesn't she?
Yeah, but she didn't want to look like she was leading on too much. But meanwhile, over at the prison, we have Peter back in it, and he's sort of begging to get a bit more booze off of Jim. He says, you're not getting anything until everything turns out okay with Liz and Steve, because he still thinks that Steve's going to possibly turn up as well today, doesn't he?
He still needs Peter to get him. He doesn't want to give in yet.
Yeah.
Although I don't know why he doesn't. It's not like Peter doesn't need a constant supply of it.
So we had this meeting with Jim and Liz fairly early on in the episode, and she... You could see, like, in her eyes that she was there was still something there, because when he, like, goes, oh, do I get a hug? She's looking quite wistful, isn't she? She's like, I've got to fight this urge.
She does. She kind of looks, yeah, she looks, like, longing and sad and surprised and lots of different emotions. Well done, Liz.
I think he came on a bit too strong, though.
He was too cocky.
He's flirting straight away. Exactly. He's like, oh, you know, we've always had something. There's always going to be this thing between
us.
Yeah,
you'll
never
get over me.
Yeah, and he's like trying to find out about Tony, but she's not interested in telling him about it. But she's like, yeah, we've had some good times, but you wrecked our lives. It just doesn't seem right for me. He robbed that bank to try and get money so that he and Liz could buy the pub together.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot worse than that in the past, I think. But I don't know.
Memory.
Yeah. I still think that by the end of this, there's going to be some kind of reunion, do you think?
I'm sure that's probably one of the main reasons that Tony's even in the show.
I think everybody kind of wants Liz and Jim to be together.
The thing is, though, I kind of don't in a way, because she can't be back with him permanently unless she leaves, because he's not in it.
Yeah, I mean, he's only got the short contract, hasn't he? But I remember when Jim was sent to prison for the first time back in 2000 or whenever it was, and I remember thinking, oh, I hope that he comes back, and he has been back lots of times since then.
It's because the actor enjoys guest starring on the soap rather than having it as a regular gig. So he is an interesting character, and he's always welcome to come back, isn't he? Because
But I'm saying every time that he's been back, yeah, it's been like, oh, is he going to get back together with Liz? Because they are so good together. But yeah, as we said, he starts getting a bit too cocky, and she's getting wound up and calling him selfish. And he's like, oh, see, look, you're getting angry. You still got a passion for me. And she has to like say, no, that's enough. I'm not interested. I just came to tell you that you're never going to see me or the family ever again.
Aww.
It was probably quite difficult for her, because like we said, I think she still does feel something, but she knows she mustn't, and
Jim is
bad for her. Sad. Meanwhile, we had the little side story, didn't we, with Michelle trying to sort out Tracy's wedding, which I kind of threw
I
into
found
this storyline.
Fascinating that money is no object, but the budget is £9,000 or something.
With everything that she wants, I don't think she's going to get
we
that.
We didn't have a a harpist or a string quartet, did they?
Or white lion.
I think when we were looking into it, a string quartet cost about £300.
I can't remember how much they said it was, but
it's 170 or something, wasn't it, for the harp?
For the harpist.
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't remember now, but yeah.
But I mean that's down south, but it was still 4 years ago, so it might be more expensive.
This seems like it's turning into Tracy is turning into Karen McDonald part two, because they had a string quartet playing Wonderwall, or a half is playing Wonderwall, and that exact song was mentioned in Tracy. I don't think Tracy would like the idea that she's quite so similar in her tastes to Karen.
But don't forget that Michelle was on the phone inquiring about Firestarter.
Oh yeah, they mentioned the Prodigy as well.
Look on YouTube to see if I could find a version of Firestarter played on a harp, and apparently no, it's a completely original idea.
Do you think that they're... I can't imagine what this wedding is going to be like.
It's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be too much like Karen and Steve's.
We said we wanted a comedy wedding. Well, it will be, if as long as there's no drama, although there will be, because you'll probably get arrested during it, I'm sure.
Well, it's all going to coincide with the trial, isn't it?
They must, kicking off.
They must be filming it at the moment, because we saw that Corey Pride video the other day, didn't we? And they had some scenes there filmed at the courthouse.
The trial, yeah.
So if it's coinciding, it must be going on
right. That was a spoiler, wasn't it?
No. What else happens? So Peter goes back to find Jim later and saying, there you go, Liz came over, can I have a beer please, or whatever it is that he's getting. And Jim really gets tipped over the edge by Peter, who is, so he's just been pushing in too much, and he's insisting, look, you've got to give me this. He's desperate by now. Gets in the violent side of Jim again, pushes him against the locker and says, look, I never cared about you, Peter. I just wanted my family back. You better watch out, because I'm in the mood to knock someone's lights out, basically.
Yep.
So Peter...
Peter staggers off, basically.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ken is asking about Jim to Liz, because he wanted Jim to look after him. And Liz says Peter's going to do better to stay away from him, which is completely right, because when Peter... Peter ends up getting himself in trouble when he follows Jim out of his cell and into the kitchen where they are taking booze, which has been hidden.
Yeah, Jim and this other bloke.
Yes.
This is exactly like Orange is the New Black, isn't it? With all the smuggling in. So we assume from this then that Jim's know somebody in the kitchen and they're getting this hooch brought in or something rather than being made in the prison. So Peter sees where it's all been kept, and as soon as Jim's out the door, Peter's there.
Down in it,
yeah.
He ends up collapsing on the floor, and Jim discovers him when he comes back to collect the rest of it, which Jim, he's obviously drunk. And he tells his little friend to go off and get a guard. And then we see Ken getting a phone call to say Peter's in hospital and he's got alcohol poisoning and he's in intensive care.
I thought that the Jim rescuing Peter, he obviously did seem to care for Peter and not about the fact that his cover's been blown. Because,
well, I don't know. I thought it was a bit hammy acting.
Peter.
He was really going for it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But I think there will be serious repercussions here, because obviously now the stash has been discovered.
Yeah.
The supplies
the
will
landlord
be cut off.
Has been outed.
Yeah.
Well, it's still not, I mean, are they going to know that it's Jim? Not necessarily.
Well, he's
going
to lie about it, isn't he? So we'll see what happens. But
yeah.
He's not going to like this at all, because it puts his business in jeopardy.
Yeah. So just then at the end of the episode, we had Steve sort of not really wanting to talk about Jim. Michelle throughout the episode seems to want to build bridges a little bit more, doesn't she, in the family, which is nice. Peter is seriously ill in
That's
hospital
the final
at the end.
Scene with
intensive
Peter.
Care.
He needs to fight, the doctor says. It's all down to him now. There's nothing more we can do. And Ken says, the last thing Peter needs is another fight. It's like, no, it's not the same sort of fight,
quote.
Isn't it? Is it?
All he needs is a little collar around his neck like Eccles, and he'll be fine.
Stop licking yourself, Peter.
That was funny when Deirdre was worried about Eccles and all the other dogs laughing at him.
Her, sorry.
Glad
so you
we
can't
still
even
get...
tell she's a girl now. She's got that blue collar around her neck.
I'm glad we still get an update about Eccles after getting hit by that car, because getting a bit worried about
it. I know, I was worried about it too, but it's just a £100 vet bill, which is quite cheap, really. If any, we had bills that were one-off that cheap.
Mm. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing how this storyline carries on, because it was, again, it's the pace is going nicely. There hasn't been too many, like, repeated, it's not going around in circles necessarily, yeah, is good. It? Lots has happened this week, which is great. Now, not much has happened in the Mad Max story, because it was only Monday, but it was quite interesting, because it was all based around Lily's first birthday party.
Aww.
Can it really be a year since Kylie gave birth on Gail's sofa?
It'd be quite good to have a birthday around this time, because you get 3 days off, possibly, in a week.
Yeah, she's. It's, it
Do you seems, know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, everyone else, you've got 2 out of 7 chances to have your birthday on a day off, whereas she's got 3 out of 7 chances because it could be the bank holiday.
Yeah, well, she's always going to have a birthday on the school holidays, isn't she?
Lucky duck.
I know. So, they've got a bouncy castle. Max is very excited about this because that's the perfect
crazy
outlet
child
for his.
Thing.
Yeah. David gives them some secret chocolate cake.
Was that a smart idea? No. No, David, it wasn't.
Because Audrey's car is broken down, she can't
look
after it.
Kylie and David are running around trying to sort everything out, and they needed Audrey to come to babysit. But unfortunately, her car breaks down and she can't. So David tries to distract Max by giving him chocolate cake, which doesn't work because Max runs outside into the road, runs over to where Steve's cleaning his little van, his wedding van, and he smears chocolate cake all over it. Kylie, who asked David to watch Max while she went out, sees this and starts freaking out because she just wants one day for Lily without Max interfering.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing the beginnings of Kylie's breakdown in today's episode.
What breakdown?
Well, she seems to be having a bit of a mental breakdown about not being able to cope with this child.
Poor Kylie.
Yes. So Audrey comes in the end anyway. So they're all getting all ready. Sally comes nosing around to show off photos of Rosie's first birthday party.
For some reason. Says, oh, I think I tried too hard. I'd rather have a casual do like you're doing. And obviously she doesn't like this because she's putting a lot of effort in, Kylie is. So Amy's also being quite hilarious and a bit of a cow because she tells Gail that if she gives her milk, then Tracy's going to sue them, which is great.
Glad they remembered that bit of continuity there.
Yeah, so all the kids are outside playing on the bouncy castle, and then Max has a timeout because he kicks Liam. And Sally's moaning at saying that she's being too hard on her.
Him.
And so
Kylie's been too hard on Max.
Yeah, yeah. So Max ends up being upstairs in his bedroom, and obviously Gail comes out holding a giant cake.
This is hilarious.
And Max starts to throw teddy bears at the lawn. So instead of turning him off and taking the cake inside, they just stand there and watch him until finally he throws it at Gail and she drops the cake on the floor.
Brilliant.
So Kylie runs inside and starts crying because she wants people to think that she's a good mum and she can't cope with this all this terrible behaviour. David thinks she's run inside to sort Max out, but actually she just collapsed. She can't deal with it. And so she's just given up.
So in the second half, we had Michael turning up with his ice cream van, perfect for parties. And by this time, for some reason, Max was back down in the garden as if nothing had happened. I mean, he was sent up for that time out and
now he's back down again. He's doing the cake.
Yeah, and he gets a lolly from it, although it's free from artificial flavourings and preservatives.
He shouldn't be rewarded.
Even so,
no.
He shouldn't have been. It's like he's been forgotten about already.
Now, unfortunately, he should have been kept upstairs because the next time Kylie finds him, he's opening Lily's presents. I don't know what of interest would be in
a 1-year-old's birthday present.
A little girl's as well. So yeah. He goes upstairs after he gets shouted at. Gail, after everything's over and done with, Gail still thinks that he's just acting like a normal 7-year-old boy, and Kylie's starting to blame herself and saying she handled things badly, but David tries to convince her things will be a lot clearer when they go to see the specialist next week.
Yes, and next week's also going to be Max going back to school, isn't it? So he's probably going to be causing chaos there, but at least he'll be out of Kylie and David's hair for a bit. So that was quite exciting. I like a good party that goes wrong on Coronation Street.
What party ever goes right, really?
True. The time has come to talk about Luke and Katie, I'm afraid.
Cake.
Luke, Katie. So they are definitely becoming a couple. They solidified their couple relationship status this
week.
Well,
they have a bit of a flirt on Monday, and then on Wednesday they arrange to meet up, and it's not a date, which is soap code for we're going on a date.
Yes. Now, they've been kind of getting close for weeks or months, haven't they? But they seem to just be denying it.
Well, it doesn't help because when Steph finds that Luke and Katie are off together having a not date in the Rovers. She decides to play Gooseberry because she doesn't like the idea of them going out together. So she goes to the Rovers and sticks herself in between them and starts telling them horrible stories about each other and calling them gross. And she says that Katie threw up in the sink and Luke picks his nose and eats it.
Then she says,
well, I'm just going to leave you to it anyway. And they both decide that dating's going to be too much trouble before they then go outside and kiss anyway.
Hooray.
And that's kind of the same thing that happens on Friday.
Yeah, pretty much. Steph has shared my nightmare of Katie and Luke getting together. And she's basically telling him, she's trying to heavily hint how awful it would be if they were a couple. She doesn't like the idea of her brother hanging around anymore.
No, she doesn't want... I wouldn't like it either if my best friend and my brother started going out with each other. It would be awkward and weird.
Yeah. But yeah, Luke shows up and he and Katie give each other furtive looks.
They end up in the garage together and have a snog and sneak into the camper van to go
Steve's getting his MOT today, wasn't he?
What?
Well, it was very shocking, whatever it was, because it made the caravan rock back and forth. And then when Steve and Steph came and had a look later,
they both closed the door pretty fast when they saw what was going on in there.
It was funny. Steph's hilarious.
Yeah, Steve was disgusted because his van has been soiled, and Steph was disgusted because she didn't want to see her brother and her best friend in the all together.
No, not very nice stuff.
So Steve wants to have the van disinfected, which is fair enough, because it's supposed to be a wedding van, not a shagging van.
He was saying, I hope we get a free MOT and service out of it, and I think Bluminacki's definitely should.
Yeah, but Tyrone needs the money, see?
Oh, no.
It's a dilemma, isn't it? It's going to be the main storyline next week, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we've got this to look forward to for the next few months. Do you think, to be honest, they probably are a good couple, because, I mean, they're just like the vacuous youths who've got
mind Luke as much as you do. I think I don't mind him. I think he's got potential, because they haven't tried to make him too hunky, although they did cut off his lovely hair.
He's just the same as all the other hunky. He's just a Tommy Duckworth or a Ryan Connor to me. He's got nothing going for him, nothing interesting about him at the moment. No, just another mechanic that's there for the eye candy. But I mean, I wonder what Chesney will think about it, because who has got Joseph at the moment. Does Katie?
I don't know.
I think it must be Katie. So maybe Chesney didn't like the idea of Ryan looking after Joseph, did he?
The thing is, though, I'd rather have Luke looking after it. I would imagine he'd be quite a nice bloke for the kid.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Have they talked very much about Luke's opinions to do with all his feelings towards looking after a baby?
They're always really careful about, like, not really going there. They don't really go there very much. But I think it would be perfectly natural to be a bit worried about suddenly having a kid around, that if you didn't have one and you weren't that bothered about them. But I guess a lot of people have different, he might like kids, I don't know.
Yeah. So are we going to be in for some hilarious scenes up at the flat where Steph has to
dodge around
and
put up with them snogging?
I can't wait for that. Julie this week.
Julie.
This looks like the start of a nice, interesting storyline, doesn't it?
Well, it seems to like there's a bit of a rivalry starting between Julie and Mary.
We haven't seen much of Mary for ages, have we?
No.
Mary's just like smug in the gym because she's on a higher level on the cross trainer.
Yeah, so Mary and Julie end up on the cross trainer together because Julie's decided to sign up for the gym.
Not because she wants to lose weight.
Well, we get to that, don't we?
Yes, we do.
So when Julie's signing all the paperwork, Mary gets jealous when Dev shakes her hand and says, oh, it's the start of a great relationship. But he means between health and fitness, not between him and Julie. But then Dev ruins everything by telling Julie that all the weight will come right off when she starts coming regularly. And she gets really upset and says, look, I don't want to lose weight. I've got a healthy BMI. I'm not here for that. I want to get fit. Dev starts backpedaling and Julie's like, no, I'm going to cancel this. I don't like this at all. I don't like your attitude. I'm leaving. So
really, one of the first things that you should be asked is like, why are you joining the gym? What's your goal?
They never assume that you want to lose weight, even though obviously that's what you're there for.
Mm.
They always just say, are you there for general fitness? Do you have a particular goal in mind? You say, I would like to be thin. And they say, ha, 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 ha. Just give us your money and go away.
So Dev is feeling guilty and a bit embarrassed about all that for the rest of the episode.
Well, really, Cal's the one that makes him go to apologise because he says, look, we need Julie to get everyone from the factory to join in because no one's going to join now. You've offended her. And you've basically
lost some of our, business, potential business.
So Dev has to go to Julie and make up to her and says, and she says, oh, I think you're perfect, but I only said what I said because I thought that's what a client would want to hear.
That came out of nowhere a bit, really, didn't it? There's not been any hints at all about Dev sort of fancying Julie or anything.
No, I think he was just sucking up to her.
Well, do you think that he does fancy her, though?
No.
I don't know, because the way he said it, it sounded like a romantic thing to, like he was saying it in a romantic way. It reminded me of that bit in Love Actually, where the man's there with the boards telling, what's her face, Keira Knightley, that she's perfect.
Well, I'm sure if they'll put them together or try to, just because Mary's jealous about it. But we look back to Dev's previous girlfriends, Maya and Sunita. I couldn't think of a more opposite look to Julie.
Wow. Change as good as the rest.
Well, anyway, I don't think she's his type.
So is this going to be Mary, sort of jealous revenge again? Because we know that
she goes a bit psycho, doesn't she?
I can see her, like, interfering with some of the fitness equipment or
something. Yeah, good.
We've had a gym for all this time and there hasn't been any, like, people hilarious getting crushed by weights or anything.
Brilliant.
So that's possibly going to happen.
Spot for you, Julie.
Yeah.
Dev gives her a 3 month and 2 personal training sessions, which I don't know who that's going to be with. Maybe it'll be with Dev under the covers.
No, with Cal, I assume. But yeah, the start of a beautiful friendship, maybe.
Maybe.
And we'll finish off with our Over's Return storyline.
Not very much to this, really.
Well, no, the main thing was this landlord from the Flying Horse coming round, Dean Upton, who is played by famous bloke. I forgot what his name is. He's so famous. I can't remember. He's a famous comedian.
No, you told me he was famous, but I don't know who.
No, he is. I've got it on my phone. Go and get my phone from over there, because I've said who plays it. But it's a comedian on. It's like he does. He's like mates with Peter Kay and that crowd.
I don't know who Peter Kay's friends are.
He is played by Justin Morehouse, who is comedian
and
actor.
I've never seen this guy in my life.
I think I might have seen him, but they made
but
a
he
big.
He has been in Phoenix Nights, and we didn't watch that.
No, they made a big thing about him being in it. He is the like the celebrity cameo playing the flying horse landlord. But yeah, I've never heard of him, so maybe some of our listeners have.
I don't even recognise him without his beard.
Ah, that's a good picture. So he comes round because, and there's obviously some kind of rivalry going on between the Rovers and the Flying Horse. If you look at those old maps of Weatherfield, the Flying Horse is literally just round the corner from the Rovers, isn't it? I don't know how they can both stay in business. But anyway, he's putting on a cricket tournament. Steve is like saying, well, we've already got a team already, actually. Steve kind of...
idiot.
Yeah, getting a bit too big for his boots. And he basically hangs up a sign-up sheet and people start
signing up
for the week.
Well, yeah, Steve basically lies about it and it ends up that Dean wants them to have a match.
Yeah.
So he needs to quickly get a cricket team from out of nowhere. And he does get some people signing up because Alia catches Gary signing up for the cricket team and she says she's going to sign up too because it's not a men's team, anyone can play, it's like Quidditch.
What's that? There's a scene with Gary and Alia just happens to show up there.
Mm.
And Rob at the end as well. Yeah. Now, it does smack a little
bit.
Why
don't they get the gym to sponsor him?
Who? The gym?
The gym.
Oh, yeah. This does sound a little bit too much like the football storyline they had just a few years ago. That was literally 2 years ago.
You can't change the sport and make it a completely different thing. And also, I genuinely don't think that many people understand what the hell is going on in cricket.
No, well, you can get away with the football storyline, can't you? Because I don't like football at all, but I understand kind of what the aim of it is.
There's two goals, and you've got to boot it in the other one's goal.
It's like when we watch poker on TV or on films. We went to see Sin City 2 last night, and there's a scene where these people playing poker. Whenever they show the hands and like the audience are supposed to know, is this a good set of cards?
Like,
is this a bad set of cards? Is this better than that?
Look at the cards they've got. Ooh, some of them match.
But I don't think people understand cricket well enough, or maybe it's just us. But
I think we're just idiots.
I don't think it could be too exciting. I think that
They should play the cricket music.
I think they should bring back what's her name from the Weathy Arms, because she was great, that landlady, yeah, I liked wasn't her. She? They should have like a three pub.
A Tri-Wizard tournament.
Yeah, exactly that. But I don't think she's going to be back in it. But I don't know whether this is obviously going to be a very short little storyline. I mean, it was in the beginning of the week because it was something for Steve to take his mind off having to go and see Peter in prison. But we're obviously going to get some kind of cricket match scene, and maybe someone will get a cricket ball to the head or something. I don't know.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
And
fascinating.
Gary and Alia will be sitting on the bench. I don't even know what the terminology is for cricket, but I'm not too excited about this particular.
You need to wear white.
The football storyline. I thought it was going to turn into something big and there'd be in a big league or something. But they literally had one match, didn't they? And that was it. It was a waste. And I think exactly the same thing is going to happen here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to disagree with you. But at the same time, I think the alternative is we have to watch boring cricket Coronation Street. Exactly, so I'm not really that bothered.
I like the inter-pub stuff because they always talk about going off to the Flying Horse or the Weathy Arms or whatever. And it's nice to know that these places actually exist.
I guess it's also nice to have some interesting British sports in, like the bowling, or was it what was the Ida Fag thing?
Yeah, that was bowls, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's French, isn't it?
Yeah, but what have we got in town? The oldest bowling green in the entire world.
We do have that in our town.
So I think you'll find that proves, without a doubt, that we invented it.
Fine, I'll let you have that one.
That's archaeological evidence.
So I look forward to that next week. Well, kind of. But no, on the whole, it was a good week. So Tyrone stuff was good. All the big house stuff was exciting as well. I enjoyed Mad Max on Monday. It was just all the Luke and Katie and the cricket stuff that I wasn't too keen on. But that didn't take up too much of the time. So good week on the whole. Do you agree?
Yes, I do.
Good week on the whole. Okay, right. Shall we go on to our character profile now?
Let's do that.
Okay, character profile time. I've been doing lots of character profiles this week, getting ready in the summer holidays, kind of preparing some for the future weeks. Watch out, everyone. We will be doing Ken Barlow at some point. It's going to be a monster. But not this week. This week, we are going to be saying, what about you, to Jim McDonald. I wanted to do him a few weeks ago, but then Jenna went and left and she
bloody
ruined it.
Bloody Jenna ruins everything.
But Jim, he's back. So he is. How many of his catchphrases are we going to get into this little character profile here?
I don't know. Are you starting off with the talking points? Or are you going to go into the biographical
I've got the notes in the wrong part.
Well,
here
then
you go.
Let me start off with when he was born. He was born on the 14th of November in 1955. So it's possible he might be in it for his birthday.
Oh, yeah, he might be in it for his birthday. 14th, let me just think. That is like a week and a half before my mum was born.
Aww. Maybe they're weirdly co-joined twins.
Maybe. His parents were Edward and Macy McDonald, and he married Liz Greenwood was her maiden name in 1974, and then again in 2000. He had three children, Andy, Steve and Katie, who died.
Well, also Andy died as well.
He might as well have died, he's not been mentioned. Well, no, he got mentioned a little bit, didn't he?
He got a name check a few times.
I'm sure Andy will be back at some point. Well, I hope so. Yeah, Andy and Steve were born in 1974, and then we had Katie born in 1992. Jim first appeared on the 27th of October, 1989, and he's been in around 1,130 episodes so far, which puts him 49 in the most featured characters. So that's not bad.
That's not bad.
Considering how much on-again, off-again he is. And also interesting is he's only 5 episodes behind Peter in the number of episodes that.
Yeah, so he's been the 49th most featured character and the 12th longest running character of the current cast.
If you can kind of include that, but maybe not. He's played by Charles Lawson, did you know?
I did not know that. He was working in the National Theatre when he was first approached to appear on Coronation Street, but he turned them down and he confessed later in 2009 that he was a bit up his own arse. Then they asked him again the following year, and because they were going to introduce the McDonald's, and he hadn't actually watched it because he was at the pub when it was on, but he decided to give it a shot anyway.
So he seems to be playing himself, basically, at the moment.
Yeah, then. Yeah. So in 1974... before they appeared on the show, he married Liz and they had twins. He served in the Royal Engineers and left Liz to raise the children herself for quite a while.
Yeah, so we got quite a lot in the early days of Coronation Street, sort of talking about him being in the army, and that was quite a big thing. They've not really mentioned it at all this time round.
No, but it is one of the major points about his character is that he's been in the army.
Yeah. So 1989 was when he moved to Weatherfield with the family, and I think this is not long after he'd left. So this is the first time really that he's been a major part of the boys' lives, because Liz had to raise them herself, and he didn't really know what he was doing. So 1990, he turned down the post of an army recruitment officer because he knew Liz hated the army. She kind of resented the fact that she'd stolen
him away.
Yeah, for all this time. So she was dead against him taking this post. So instead, he had a brief stint as a TV repairman, but lost the job after dropping Alf's TV on the floor, Alf Roberts.
That's not going to fix it, is it? So he supports Andy in his desire to join the army, but Liz doesn't want him to go. Then he gets a job as a motorbike repairman under the viaduct.
I'm quite surprised reading that Andy wanted to join the army, because out of the two boys, he was like the studious, intelligent one. And we're not saying that people in the army aren't clever, but you'd have thought that Andy, kind of right from the beginning, would have...
a more action-based person.
Yeah, and I don't think Andy was like that. I would have thought that he would have been like straight off to university, which is kind of what happened kind of in the end.
In 1991, he convinced Liz not to have an abortion when she gets pregnant, and he starts to build an extension in the backyard to his neighbour's annoyance.
Yeah, so Liz got pregnant that year, and she wanted to have an abortion, but because he missed out on the twins being brought up, he was like, no, I'm going to do it right this time, I'm going to be a really good dad. He got all excited and built this extension in the backyard, and the people next door weren't too happy about this. Sadly... the baby died, and this is like right at the beginning of the year. Liz gave birth prematurely, and this was all mixed in with the storyline where Steve and Andy were getting involved with some dodgy dealings with stolen radios and things, and they were like gangs that were threatening to beat them up. I think somebody did beat up Andy. Steve was the main one out of the two that was in charge of this, and he runs off for a bit over New Year. Nobody knows where they are, so Liz was getting worried. She has a miscarriage. And that was the end of Katie. But Jim very much, I think, blamed Steve for this.
He does. He blames him for it.
Yeah, but they got back together again anyway, Liz and Jim. He also got a job at the garage that year under Kevin Webster because his motorbike repair business went under.
Ah, under the viaduct.
We had 1993. He resigned from a security guard post, which he'd acquired in the meantime, because he failed to come to Andy's rescue during an armed robbery. So this is quite interesting. This is obviously where his ideas about armed robbery came from. Andy was there in the bank, and Jim didn't do anything when the robbers came in. So I think he felt like a bit of a coward. And I imagine from somebody coming from the army, that's like doubly shameful.
Yeah, exactly.
But he then, the next time he came across a thief in his security guard job, he really laid into him, beat him up. But it turned out to be just a 15-year-old boy. So,
whoops.
Whoopsie indeed. Also that year, Liz got her own bar, the Queen's, which Jim helped her to run, until he thumped the boss, that is, who he thought that she was having an affair with.
But she hadn't, so she left Jim, the dirty dog, and they both cite for divorce.
File for divorce,
citing unreasonable behaviour. But they're back together by New Year, because that's just how they were.
They just can't stay away from each other. They had a very kind of fiery, passionate marriage. They were shouting at each other
just
one
like
minute,
ours.
And then...
Ah! Oh, I love you.
Yeah, but they were like, oh, Elizabeth, let me take you right off to bed. Up the stairs.
Oh, my goodness.
With Liz giggling away. They really did have a...
whirlwind romance.
Yeah.
Stormy,
exactly, is the word to describe them. But
like
yeah,
Heathcliff,
so they were back
and whatever
together.
The girl's name was.
I don't know.
In 1994, he gets a job at Mike Baldwin's executive taxi firm, and that was all that happened that year.
Nothing else
How
happened
boring.
That year for Jim.
In 1995, Jim and Liz go up against the Duckworth to buy the Rovers when Bette left, and both the couples needed to sell their houses to raise the money, but the Duckworth eventually came out on top.
Yeah, I think they sold their house to Gary and Judy Mallett, so they were able to do that. I'd have loved to have seen Liz and Jim properly behind the bar at the Rovers. They seem like a really good kind of landlord.
They would be. I think quite a lot of people probably who don't watch it but know some of the characters might tell you that they were.
Yeah, because I mean, Liz is a great manager at the bar at the moment, yeah, isn't she? She's sort of no nonsense.
Fitted right back into that role perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no replacing Bette Lynch, but Liz is by far Liz the one that's come closest to that, so. Definitely. And I'd just love to see at some point in the future, like the pair of them standing behind the bar, like Jim with his arm around Liz. They would be brilliant running the Rovers. But anyway, it was not to be because Jack and Vera got it, and they were quite funny as the Rovers. Landlord and landlady for a little bit, even though it didn't really go very well for them.
Jim decides to go into a building partnership instead with Bill Webster.
He had loads of jobs, didn't he, Jim?
They all do.
Yeah.
They all do,
when they want to change the storyline, they give him a new job.
So in 1996, on the way back from an army reunion, Liz confesses that she had an affair with Jim's mate, Johnny Johnson.
Johnny Johnson.
Mm, good name. While he was in the army. So Jim takes this very well and says they should go to couples counselling. No, he doesn't. No, he drags her out of the car and he hits her and he leaves her lying in the road and having to find her own way home.
I don't remember whether I've seen that scene or not. I've seen like maybe little clips from it or something, but that's a really, really famous Jim and Liz scene, I think. Where
terrible.
You get to really see his temper.
I mean, evil.
He always had a bit of a temper anyway, and he was very strict on the boys when he was looking after them.
Should never go back.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? He's a
once they beat you up and chuck you out the car, that's when I say, draw the line.
But she loves him. Still, we like Jim.
This is what I found when I was watching all that drama with Rihanna and Chris Brown. I thought they've stolen this right off of Coronation Street because they did that first.
Exactly the same.
So Liz breaks into their house.
No, Jim breaks into their house.
Okay, you don't write the names down of what's going on. You've written, Liz does this, and then...
So, no, they got home. Jim tried to break into their house with a spade. So, yeah, Liz has a restraining order.
What, so he kicks her out of the car and drove home without his keys?
I don't know what happened. I told you I don't remember whether I watched it. Right, basically, okay. Liz gets home and she takes the car. No, she doesn't take the... Oh, I don't remember.
I've totally confused you, haven't I?
Yeah, I'm confused.
But basically, somebody...
Liz takes the house.
Breaks into the house.
Jim definitely breaks into the house with a spade. Gets a restraining order and spends 3 weeks in Strange Race.
He gets a restraining order against Liz.
She didn't want anything to do with him because he'd beaten her up, hadn't he?
Liz gets... Okay.
Oh, no, I don't understand it. I don't understand the time.
You've written somebody breaks into their house with a spade, then gets a restraining order and then goes to prison. I think you mean Jim breaks in, Liz gets a restraining order, and then Jim goes to prison.
It all makes sense.
This
is making
person.
Fascinating listening at the moment.
This is we're very professional.
Got to make sure we get it right.
And then Jim hits the bottle after his mum dies, and Liz demands half of his £40,000 inheritance. Hmm.
Did you know that Strange Ways Prison isn't called Strange Ways anymore?
What's it called?
I don't remember. I should have that.
What a great fact.
But it's called Strange Ways because of the part of... Oh, no, it's just called, like, Manchester Prison or something like that.
I didn't even know it was in Manchester.
It is. But I also was trying to look up this Highfield prison that they're in at the moment. And you know what? I don't think it actually exists.
No
way. I couldn't
find
any reference to Highfield prison.
They would make it up because it takes away the realism.
Sadly, it's true. So, in 1997, Jim had a one-night stand with Steve's ex, Fiona. Fiona Middleton.
Phillips.
And I thought that was a bit weird.
Middleton?
Oh, not Middleton. Is it Middleton? Yeah.
I'm making you doubt.
I think it was Fiona Middleton.
Known.
Look.
Do you know what the name of the show is?
I don't know anything anymore. He had this lovely lady who Mel B also auditioned for. Just a bit of a fact there.
If only she had got it.
Yes. And then on a scene that I always remember from Jim, it was Fiona and Alan McKenna's wedding. I think he was a police officer or something. And then Jim comes in the back of the church. He's like, don't marry him, Fiona. Fiona, you have to tell them about us, her. And she was dumped at the altar by Alan. And he also couldn't believe that the baby she was carrying was his, because he was like, oh, what if it's Jim's baby? But it turns out it was his after all. And Jim had had a vasectomy as well. They all have vasectomies on Coronation Street, don't they? Is that a normal thing to happen?
I wouldn't know.
Every so often they talk about people having vasectomies. 1998. Another famous scene. There's lots of famous Jim scenes, I think.
I think he's quite an iconic character, as you've already said.
So Steve had obviously not forgiven Jim for sleeping with his ex-girlfriend.
Weird.
And then he doesn't want anything to do with him.
Weird.
It seems reminiscent of what's going on at the moment.
So unusual.
Steve is working on a building site at the moment, but he won't give Jim a job. I think he must own the building business or something. I can't remember. So Jim gets a job at the garage and he goes to the building site crowing to Steve, well, I don't need your job because I've got this. Gets into a bit of a scuffle and he topples right off the building site, lands in a skip and then winds up
in a wheelchair. That's
for,
right.
I don't know how long he was in a wheelchair for, but there was another famous scene.
Yes.
When Maud comes round, who was also the she was the character in a wheelchair at the time. It's a brilliant scene where he's like hitting the bottle. I think he tries to kill himself or something, and she goes and tells him what's what and says, "Look," reminds him of his army days, and she's like, "What was your number when you were in the army?" And he was able to say it straight away. And she's like, well, that Jim McDonald back there wouldn't have given up. He would have fought. And she basically shows him that life isn't over because you're in the wheelchair. Of course, in Coronation Street, if you just get ill or in a wheelchair or in anything, you're back on your feet within.
Doesn't matter.
Which Jim is now. But before then, he had to go through some occupational therapy with somebody called Michael.
Aww.
I never liked that there was a horrible Michael. I much prefer there being a nice Michael now.
You never know. It might turn out to be a wrong one.
This therapist had an affair with Liz. And they went off to the Milton Keynes together and she and Jim divorced.
Aww.
So, I mean, she's treated him pretty badly as well.
Tit for tat, isn't it?
Yeah. 2000, he beat up Jez Quigley, whose name appears fairly regularly on this podcast, considering that he's such a small part. So he was there, he got Steve involved with drug trafficking in his taxis or something. And so Jim... He beat Steve up, and then Jim then goes around to Jez's house and beats him black and blue, and then in hospital Jez dies of a ruptured spleen. So Jim is sentenced to manslaughter, 8 years in prison.
Whoops.
And that's what I remember, and I'm thinking, oh, I love Jim. I hope he comes back. But after that was like the end of his
He marries Liz in prison.
Yeah, that was the end of his regular time, but he's been in and out of it loads since then. I think, yeah, one of the last things we saw was him remarrying Liz in prison. So it was a bit sad when he left. Apparently he was just, Charles was just summoned to the Corrie producer's office after a day's filming to tell him that he was fired.
Whoops.
Which is a bit
That's
sad.
That's really mean.
I know. But he did think it was the right thing to do because he says that things were going round in circles a bit for Jim. He says, after 10 years, I would have to agree that Jim was beginning to disappoint both the show and myself as an actor. So this was neither a shock nor a surprise. He didn't like the idea, though, that he was going to be a murderer. And originally, he was supposed to, there were rumours that he was that Jim was going to kill his then-girlfriend, Gwen, who I've got no memory whatsoever of. But that didn't turn out to be true, but he did murder someone anyway. I think if you think... You're gonna. If you're a murderer in Coronation Street, you think that that's it. You're gonna be locked away forever. But no, he's able to come back. So, 2003 was his first return to the street, and this was in some of the. This coincided with Bette Lynch's. One of her returns. So a year before his scheduled release on license, Jim escaped from prison because he thought that Liz was having an affair with her pub manager in Blackpool. So they all went off to Blackpool together. And there was, I remember a funny scene where Bette was there with Jim and then police cars drive down the road and Jim's like, are they going to see me? So Bette grabs him and gives him a big old snog to try and hide him from the police. But anyway, he gets together with Liz and they decide that they're going to flee to Ireland together. So they get a little boat and set sail across the Irish Sea. They don't get very far because they discover Ashley Peacock and Claire having a bit of nautical troubles.
What a coincidence.
No, well, they were there as well. I can't remember why, what they were doing there. But anyway, they need rescuing in their boat.
Oh,
so they get back and they get arrested.
Whoops.
Well, he gets arrested.
I keep
arrested.
Saying whoops. Stop saying whoops.
Whoops, that's right. Jim's life being a big load of whoopses.
Whoopsies. 2005, he has a fight with his cellmate and gets his parole cancelled and he's not going to get out till 2008.
Yeah, sad. So Liz gives up waiting for him and files for divorce again.
But he gets released in 2007 for good behaviour and it looks like he's reformed.
I think I remember this. I've got vague memories of Jim coming back and it was only like 6-7 years ago that he was like a proper decent bloke and he was like trying to
be nice to everybody.
Yeah,
but he hears about Liz getting married to Vernon Tomlin and he beats him up.
Vernon was such an idiot.
Yep. And then Steve tells him to get lost. So who's moaning about who telling who to get lost now, Steve.
It's all, like you said, it's all tit for tat, isn't it? That was on Vernon and Liz's wedding day, wasn't it, or something like that? And he had that stupid cowboy hat on.
Yeah.
So in 2009, Jim was in it for a bit for Steve's wedding to Becky. He just came and sort of showed that there was no bad blood, I guess. And then 2010.
Even though you told me to get lost, I don't have any hard feelings. Just remember this for the future.
Yeah. I forgot that Jim was out of prison for so long. In my head, he's just like been in prison all this time. And like, he's not known life outside of prison for 10 years. But he's
been
got up to
out.
Something for a couple of years then. 2010, he celebrated his 55th birthday with Steve and he attended Jack Duckworth's funeral. He sent Liz some flowers, which doesn't go down too well with her current boyfriend, who was Owen Armstrong. He was definitely
a bit rough around the
There's always there. Some kind of really big alpha male in Coronation Street, and it was like Len Fairclough for a long time, and Jim kind of, in a way, took over that role, and now it's definitely Owen. So it's like the two at loggerheads, not good. So Owen arranged to have Jim beaten up.
Yep. 2011, he meets up with Liz again and he suggests that they buy the Rovers from Steve and give the marriage another go.
Yeah. So he tries to get some money off of Kevin, who just won the lottery on the scratch card. Has he still got that money?
I don't know. He had to give off it to Sally, didn't he?
It gets mentioned every now and again, but that's one of these storylines that
so
is like...
weird.
Yeah, and like... if you're a lottery winner, that kind of stays with you, doesn't it? And it's
well, I don't know about scratch cards.
But you got like £100,000 or something.
Oh, but you know, we really want some money. So anyway, he refuses. Kevin refuses to give him the money, and so Jim decides to rob a bank.
Every time Jim does something stupid like that, I'm like screaming at the screen, no, don't do it, because want to see him happily married with Liz. That bank story robbing storyline was kind of exciting, but yeah, a little bit stupid.
So he gets arrested. I think wasn't Liz watching him on CCTV and crying and stuff?
He likes wants to speak to her, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's got a hostage situation or something going on, or something like
that. It was ridiculous.
It kind of escalated slightly.
Yeah.
And Liz promises to Jim that she's going to wait for him, but then she doesn't go to his trial, and he gives up on his family, gets given a minimum of 7 years in prison.
Yeah.
So that was in 2011, so he should be out in 2018.
There's still the opportunity for him to come out and be back in the show, but...
Yeah, well, that's what they did with Tracy, and they let him out earlier on. But yeah. I don't know if you can continually get let out for good behaviour when it's your like third go round.
Well, when they're let out sort of early, it's like you serve half your time, isn't it? So if he was going to be let out for good behaviour, then that could be around now or next year or something. But I mean, if they find out about him being behind this booze stuff, yeah. So he's back again this year as the landlord, providing alcohol to Peter Barlow in prison.
No,
what an exciting
naughty.
Life Jim has led.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
So he obviously dips in and out of being on Corrie, but he also works on the stage, and he's including the RSC and on TV in The Bill, Casualty, Holby.
I remember
just
when
like
he was on The
else.
Bill. I remember he was on The Bill. I was really excited, and I was absolutely shocked because that was the first time that I saw him without his moustache. And there's like he was so famous for having that little
moustache.
Little tash, and then yeah, when he was on it was like his face was naked.
Oh no. And he also has run a farm shop.
I think he still does run a farm
shop.
I
think we've mentioned this before, and we said we should go and buy some sausages.
Probably too far away. It's up north, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's always said that he's willing to go back to Corrie for a good storyline, because I've seen interviews with him saying, yeah, the money was really good. I could do with that every now and again.
Wouldn't it be great if you could just dip into like a nice big cash fund for somebody paying for you to be famous for a bit?
I think by and large, when he has come back, it has been for some kind of good storylines as well.
Yeah, he's had some, like you say, he's had some really good storylines.
A really kind of explosive character, isn't he? Sort of gets in because of his hot temper and everything. And his criminal past, and he's gonna beat someone up at some point. It's always exciting, but you still love him as a character.
I know, even though really you wouldn't. Why would you like somebody who's a wife beater? Because that's dreadful.
I know, he's just kind of funny though, isn't he? When I don't like Owen particularly, or I like him a bit more now. But when he was like the big alpha male, I didn't like him. I don't remember seeing very much of Len Fairclough on the classic Coronation Streets, but I don't think I would have liked him particularly. But Jim, there's just something about him, the Irish charm, I guess.
True.
I mean, you've only seen him on these little returns, but you've enjoyed him when he's on, haven't you? You've like, it's been good when he's come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, we've been able to go through this whole character profile without talking very much about the most famous thing about Jim, which is his catchphrases, of course. I think this has been one of the things that's made him such a memorable character. It's the same as, like, Fred Elliott with his...
Yeah, a good catchphrase will take you a long way on Coronation Street.
And Jim has very many, which is why we were able to do our little Jim bingo a few weeks ago on Twitter. I must confess, we haven't been filling in our Jim bingo card, but I think he must have said pretty much everything on it now.
Yep. What are some of those catchphrases?
Cheerio, no.
Yep.
Stephen.
Yep.
Elizabeth.
Yep.
What about you?
Yep.
And, of course, the classic, So It Is.
Yeah,
so it is. Yeah. I even saw there was an article on the Metro website that was published when Jim came back, and there was the headline of the article is like, everyone has the same joke on Twitter when Jim comes back, and it just showed a stream of tweets, people saying, oh, I'm so glad to see Jim, so I am, and oh, Jim's back, so he is. It's just, and it'd be like if Fred rose from the dead.
Aww.
With his I say.
Aww. Who else has got catchphrases? I don't even know.
Well, Archie Shuttleworth was another one, wasn't
he? Don't it now?
Nobody. I mean, it's a bit... No,
it's a bit old-fashioned.
It's a bit old-fashioned. It's a bit, like, unrealistic. I mean, I think you could get away with...
I say whoops a lot, apparently.
People don't have catchphrases, though, do they, really? I don't know. Do people have... People say things...
A lot.
Hilda had her, like, was it malapropisms or something? Is that what the word's called? Like, with her Muriel and everything. But I think some of the best catchphrases are ones that, like, come... sort of developed naturally, or they come from the actors themselves, because when Jim was cast or given the part, the Jim McDonald was never supposed to be a Northern Irishman. He was, his lines were sort of in the Manchester dialect, and when he came to read them, he was like, well, this is going to sound ridiculous, a Northern Irish person saying, calling people Chuck or whatever that they say.
Yeah, we do.
So the script writers were like, well, what sort of things do...
What do Irish people say?
What do they sound like? So he just like added in some of his So It Is and whatever, and it kind of stuck from there, and then the script writers just sort of started putting them in, and that's the same with Fred, because he got his repeating himself from like the bloke who lived next door when he was little.
Oh, see, they do have catchphrases in real life then.
But when John Savardant was little, that's quite a long time ago, back in the olden days when people had a good catchphrase.
Oh.
But... I don't know, that's what people... I think we need another good catchphrase in Corey now. I'll just try and think of one up. But, yeah, it makes him into a bit of a caricature.
I guess that's why
we like him. All, I mean, the best, most memorable Corey characters are caricatures, aren't they?
Like, yes.
Like Bette Lynch's and your Hilda Ogden's and everything.
You can't turn your back on Corey's heritage, really.
No.
And then say that, oh, no, we want to be realistic soap like EastEnders or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Are there catchphrases in EastEnders? No, we wouldn't know.
Alfie!
So, do you think that overall Jim is a goodie or a baddie?
Baddie.
You reckon?
You can't beat your wife up and be a goodie. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that as a woman, I can't condone domestic violence.
But he's not like among the ranks of like the Charlie Stubbs and the Richard Hillmans and the Pat Phelans or anything, is he? Although Phelan was quite a charmer as well.
He's definitely a villain at the moment because he's given Peter alcohol and manipulating him to try to get his family back and being generally unpleasant, isn't he?
He is, but at the same time, lots of viewers are saying, no, I want him to get back with Liz, and Peter kind of deserves
it. Yeah, I'm not saying that I don't like him. I love Tracy too, but she's a buddy.
Hmm. Yeah, I do feel sorry for Jim's predicament at the moment.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him too, but you can't say he's a good person.
No, I guess if they brought him back for good eventually, if it happens, they'll have to end up with him.
Amnesia and stuff.
Yeah, they'll have to end up being nice because
everyone gets made boring.
I think we just need to end this character profile with the biggest question about Jim: is he or is he not better without his moustache?
That was a really hard question to answer, by the way you worded it.
Moustache or no moustache?
What do you think?
You don't even know what he looks like? Find out what he looks like.
I do! What do you mean I don't know what he looks like?
Okay. I don't know. I thought that's what you meant. I don't know whether you've watched it with him with a moustache, but you can picture him in a moustache in your mind.
He doesn't have one, and that's how
he doesn't have one at the moment.
Yeah.
I was quite shocked, like I said, when he shaved it off. I'm getting used to it now. But that was all part of, that was all part of his iconic look. It'd be like if Hilda took her curlers off, it'd be a shock for the beginning. Or if Bette didn't have her leopard skin and wore something else, I guess you'd get used to it.
You have to get used to it, darling.
Yeah, I don't know what our listeners think, Jim. Better or worse without his moustache?
Stop asking it in a strange way. Do you prefer a moustache or no moustache?
Yes. Same with Kevin.
Oh, Kevin, no.
So there you go, that's Jim. We love Bitter Jim. I'm glad we were able to do him as a character profile. I'm glad he's back. Hope he's going to be back.
For long time.
I don't know how long he's in it. I honestly don't know how long he's in it for this time, but I know he's not been given a permanent contract. But one day.
Maybe he'll get extended.
Yeah. Mm. He's a really, really is a classic Coronation Street character.
He is.
Yeah. Not like some of our other classic ones that we do, just old characters.
They're all rubbish.
Anyway, there's Jim. I know that a lot of our listeners like him. If anyone's got any other thoughts they'd like to share about Jim, write in and let us know. But for now, let's move on to the cabin. It's time for the cabin, and I think Gemma's going to be taking the mic for most of the news section today. But to begin with, first off, congratulations to Catherine Tilsley, who has joined Jenny McAlpine and Paula Lane by being in the Corrie Mummies Club. Yes, her and her partner Tom are expecting their first baby in March. So congratulations to those pair.
You sound bored.
Well, I mean, everyone's getting pregnant on Coronation Street at the moment. There's only so much you can sound excited about it.
Congratulations, Catherine and Tom.
So what's going to happen? Is she going to go off to see a sick mother? Is Stella going to have something wrong with her? Yeah. That's the usual excuse, isn't it? It's sad that I don't want anything to happen between her and Jason. Hope they don't split up. And
yeah, I quite like her with Jason because they're both a pair of bimbos, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a good couple. Funny together. But there's probably going to be a dramatic reason for Kylie leaving. I don't know about Fizz, but I mean, I think Eva maybe just sort of slip away.
Maybe she's going to visit her gran.
Oh yeah, it could be. But so congratulations to them. And Gemma, what is the second
bit of news? Well, you've got to introduce what it is.
Okay, Coronation Street at the Manchester Pride. The annual Manchester Pride took place last weekend, I think. And every year they have a special Coronation Street float there. And there's all the stars there and sort of celebrating the gay culture of Manchester.
So we had on the float Les Dennis dressed up as Mavis.
I think we need to give that a bigger introduction.
Yeah, well, you
that
do
was
it,
the
then.
Absolute best thing. I mean, that's the only thing that I can possibly comment on.
Go on, then.
Les Dennis stood out, costume of the the parade. He was obviously famous for doing his Mavis impression back in the 80s, and
everyone knows about this.
I don't really know, don't they? He was famous for doing his Mavis impression on comedy shows in the 80s. And everyone, since he's come back, has been like, oh, Les, have you had that line? Is anyone, when are you going to say, I don't really know, in Coronation Street? When are you going to go into the cabin? Well, he tweeted this week that he filmed his first scene in the cabin this week, but he didn't get to say, I don't really know. But yeah, he was dressed up there as Mavis, and I think that was a bit of a surprise. So he had his white and red checked tabard. He had
gingham
check, thanks. Lovely pearl necklace. Lovely Mavis wig, giant pearl earrings. I can't see anything else because he's hiding in that picture. But he really looked the part. It was really good of him to do that. And I think made a lot of people happy dressing up like that. And he must have kept the costume because he did his ice bucket challenge dressed up as Mavis this week as well. And it's one of my favourite ice bucket challenges I've seen. So well done, Des Lennis. I keep saying that. Les Dennis. Fantastic costume. Also, I think Katie McGlynn looked fabulous as well this week.
Well, we've got Debbie Rush here, who's wearing a gorgeous black dress with red strawberries on it, and she also has matching lipstick and nail varnish. She looks very cool. Always, Debbie Rush always looks really glamorous, I think.
Katie McGlynn, I think she looks wonderful. She was wearing, what's that, a black bowler hat it looks like? What's the name of that style that she's dressed up in?
It's like a cabaret look. She's got a little black
bow tie.
And a sleeveless tuxedo top in white with and pink, bright pink lipstick on.
Yeah, again, showing how completely different from Sinead she is. There's a cool picture of her giving the girl power sign as well.
It's a peace sign, not a girl power sign. So Gary turned up wearing what his character
Mikey
wears. And he, which is a shirt buttoned all the way up to the neck for some reason. I don't know why. They let Jenna on there.
Yeah, she's got a bright red wig and I love something written on. I love Manchester, I think he's got on a t-shirt. Not the best costume.
I don't know any of their names. And
Yeah, we've got Steph there, haven't we? Who plays Steph? I can't remember.
She's got a stripy black and white tunic on. Which
and
is
fairy
right.
wings.
Yeah, fairy wings.
And there's Alia there.
Alia's got a pair of neon heart-shaped sunglasses on. Who plays...
Brooke Vincent.
Brooke Vincent was wearing a rainbow cowboy hat with a red T-shirt with a slogan, which is from Stonewall, some people are gay, get over it.
Mm. I think Brooke Vincent kind of has to be a bit of a big Corrie ambassador in these things, considering the role that she plays.
And she's wearing a turquoise fringed pair of shorts.
Yeah, we got
And
Anthony.
She had a hideous bag and a pair of horrible shoes. She had a pair of like peach Nike trainers on, and like her bag is like a big patent baby blue sack, it seems to be.
Lovely. Anthony Cotton's there wearing jeans and t-shirt. I can talk about this. Jeans and t-shirt, black t-shirt with a slogan gay okay on.
Yes.
And he's looking very happy in this picture because he's in the middle of a hug with two men that are just wearing shorts here. Yeah.
And I don't know who, was it Kim Marsh? She's also wearing trainers. Oh no, she's wearing boots with a short patterned dress, which is mostly black. Oh, and I don't know who plays Andrea.
I know we're not very good at this.
She's dressed as a sugar plum fairy, and she's got on a leotard, pink sequin leotard with a frilly like tutu on. She's got elbow length gloves and tights, and she doesn't really. Oh, Hayley Tamaden. See, I didn't even know that was her name.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's the split up into the people who are wearing costumes and the people that are just like
wearing clothes.
Just wearing clothes. And I would hope for her that is definitely just a costume in that picture.
Yeah, me too.
We've got Sherilee Houston there with the same rainbow cowboy hat.
She's got
hat.
A little, and she's also got a slogan t-shirt and a pair of leggings on.
Yeah, I think that's the I Love Manchester t-shirt there.
I think that is probably it for our Corrie cast.
Yeah, I think that is everybody. So good turnout at the Pride, but definitely Les Dennis gets the prize this time.
And the float was decked out like the Rovers' return.
I don't know whether it's the same float they use every year. It looks kind of similar.
It always seems to be the same. So it looks like the Rovers' return, but the street sign's in pink, and they've got like streamers coming out the back and the rainbow flag, and here comes the Pride written on it.
Yeah.
And you've got a bath falling in.
Is that what that is? I can't tell what that is in the middle of the float. But anyway, I'm sure that a lovely time was had by all at the Pride. And they even referenced it on the show this week, didn't they? They had Sean saying that he's going to get the dregs at the end of the Pride week. So it's nice when they reference that.
Yeah.
But yeah, lovely, lovely float. Well done, Corrie. Good turnout.
Exactly.
And that's it for the news. There's still been lots of like spoilers of like what's happening this autumn and stuff going on in the news this week, so if you want to find that out, then that information is also available. But we don't, so we're going to move on to our feedback. Okay, so let's get on to our feedback today for the end of the podcast. We got a little note from Jane earlier in the week saying that she is so glad to see Jim again. I hope you enjoyed our character profile,
Jane.
She's
got a funny accent. I mean, a funny question.
Can't wait to see what tales will happen now. However, that accent, is it a caricature, or are there Irish people who really talk like that?
I daren't respond.
I was trying to look this up, and I don't know whether it is just the thing that Jim does or what. I mean, I found an article with somebody saying, I know Irish people that say so it is, and they talk about the crack, I know.
Yes, they do, don't they?
But all of his other things...
I think, is his own accent.
Well, that's just like a Northern Irish accent, isn't it? But well, all these little phrases...
Don't forget that there are... There's Northern Ireland and then there's Ireland, and they do have different accents depending on where you come from. So not every Irish person speaks like that, but
possibly, quite possibly, all Northern Irish people.
Don't be so ignorant.
No, I honestly don't know whether it's the fact that he said to the script writers, look, this is the kind of thing that you need to put in me saying to make me sound Irish, maybe makes me think that is an Irish, Northern Irish thing. But
like all things, I think it's based on reality, but exaggerated.
Yes, okay, let's agree on that one.
Entertainment purposes.
Definitely exaggerated.
Yes.
So maybe some of our Northern Irish listeners, if they exist,
they will
can let
berate
us know.
Us. Right, so Dave has also sent in an email, and he said, I loved your character profile as Spider. He was a great character, and it would be nice to see him come back for a visit, along with Toya, of course. Prior to his appearance, Emily was getting a bit dull, a little more than the old lady on the street. Spider brought out a side of Emily I hadn't seen before, and it was great.
So Emily has totally gone back into the role of just the little old lady on the street. I mean,
I think she's fine with that. She just wants her money, doesn't she?
The fact that she's getting a few more scenes with Norris and everything, I mean, that's when we get to see the side of Emily that's a bit more, she's still got a bit of life in the old dog yet. But
well, we were talking about this the other day, and hilariously, when you view Coronation Street on the television when you're going through the guide and it gives you all the information about the programme, Eileen Derbyshire has got first billing, which means she's got the best agent. So I don't think she needs storylines. I don't think she'll ever get sacked. I think she's got a job for life. And I don't think she cares if she has storylines.
I really hope she has at least one good storyline left inside of her.
Maybe, I don't know. So he also says, Dave says, "The return of Jim is wonderful. I hope he stays around for a while. What about you, Stephen? I've been with your man, Peter, in the big house." Oh, it says to be read by Michael and his best Jim.
I've just ruined it. What about you, Stephen? I've been with your man, Peter, in the big house.
Well done.
Yeah,
you saved that. So he says also it is good to have Ken back. And he likes the idea of Bethany coming back and going head to head with Kylie.
Did we say she was going to go head to head with Kylie? I honestly can't remember.
Well, it was a good idea of us. and he also says, "Keep it up, you two. I look forward to Conversation Street every week."
Good. I hope we don't disappoint this week. And we'll round off with Tibor's email, who says, "So many funny things in last week's show, and Friday's episode, written by Jonathan Harvey, were superb. Ken and Deirdre were funny while camping too. You might think Deirdre was selfish, moaning about a holiday when she wanted a holiday in the sun instead, but it seemed absolutely ludicrous that Ken thought camping was a good idea. When has he ever been an outdoors man? I think the point of the bull scene was Deirdre wearing blaring red in a field where there might be a bull. I thought the cows looked quite friendly." I think they were hoping
that nobody knows what a cow's body language is supposed to look like when it's about to attack you, but they just look like cows standing in a field.
Yeah. I don't know whether...
Maybe the point is that Deirdre and Ken were scared of cows because they are so city-bound that they can't tell...
Probably the first time they've ever seen one.
Oh my god, I thought they were smaller.
Well, Ken has never been an outdoors man because he's never really had the opportunity, what with living gritty Weatherfield.
We've
but you know,
watched him grow up in the cobbled streets.
Being in Canada, which I just in my head is just full of redwoods and things, I imagine that he'd become quite an outdoors people when he
snowy.
Was there. In Canada?
Yeah.
It probably is a bit snowy.
Snowy cities is what I imagine.
I don't imagine cities. I totally imagine like mounties and things. Sorry, everyone.
Well, I'm sure there are parts. I'm sure there are large parts of it like that.
Yeah.
I just don't think many people live there.
I don't think that Ken thought that... I think Ken just thought that it'd be nice to get away with Deirdre.
I think Ken is just always wrapped up in himself, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. She agrees with the commenter that Ken was very selfish. He always has been, and he always had my contempt for it. He looks down on everyone and is very sanctimonious. He's totally oblivious to anyone else's needs. That's why he doesn't really know Deirdre at all.
I think it's true that it kind of looked like he didn't really know Deirdre. But I also wonder how much of it is William Roach's performance. Because I think if you sort of boil it down, Ken's quite a decent bloke, but I think there's just a certain level of pomposity that William Roach just portrays the character with that I think you just do think that Ken looks down his nose on everybody.
Mm. It's interesting what Tibor said about him not really knowing Deirdre, because I mean they've had a thing on and off for like 30 years almost. But it's true that she broke up with him originally because he was boring, or she had the affair with Mike. And I think they got back together because I think Blanche played Cupid with them and showed that they still have feelings for each other, which they do. But a lot of the scenes we see with them is just like Deirdre doing one thing and like Ken with his head in the paper or the book or something.
How would that be different if you looked at any time we were doing something? You'd be on your phone, I'd be on the iPad, and we'd be watching something on television, apparently, although neither of us could tell you what was going on.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, I think... They know each other. I think they're kind of into a situation now where they kind of put up with each other.
I think that she's right there. I don't think he knows Deirdre very well. And I think probably Deirdre is a bit too... she lacks the confidence to really look any further into it.
I think that she gets... She loves him more than he loves her, maybe.
Probably.
But it's a bit sad to think. I hope they stay together.
I don't care.
Let's carry on with email. The childish tricks between both Neil and Steve and Lloyd were ridiculous. I too wonder if Neil's line about his mother in hospital is a trick. We didn't find out anything about that this week. No, they'll probably think it was, but it likely isn't. I think Neil is going to end up doing something stupid, like kidnap Andrea and lock her in the attic or something. Ah, oh, John Stave returns. Yeah. He's starting to remind me... Oh, it says that. He's starting to remind me of John Stave with his oblivious, mindless, single-minded obsession madness. Yeah, that's...
I wouldn't mind seeing another John Stape, a crazy John Stape story.
Stape storyline was hilarious. I know a lot of people thought that it kind of got out of hand and was silly.
I think it was creepier and stupider when it was John and Rosie, but this would actually be quite scary because it's like he could do anything. When John kidnapped Rosie, you knew it wasn't going to escalate because Rosie was a main character and also she's a child.
Mm.
And you kind of were supposed to feel a little bit... John was kind of like a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, whereas you were supposed to feel sorry for him.
You could imagine him murdering Andrea.
Mm.
You really could, because she's not a main character. She could get bumped off, no problem. They could get rid of Neil, no problem.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
think it'd be amazing.
Neil we still kind of see as a side character, isn't he? He's not like a proper full cast member or anything.
No.
But with John Stape, you got to kind of sympathise with him because he was a main character, and you knew him a bit more. But with Neil,
who knows what he would do to Andrea if they wanted to?
I can't imagine there being scenes with just like Neil on his own. Sort of, I don't know, but it's getting interesting, that story.
I don't imagine it would go that way because they wouldn't ever do such a big storyline with two minor characters. But wouldn't it be incredible?
Oh, they still might do.
You know, I love a good murder, don't you? I love a good murder.
They still might do because they keep trying to give Lloyd bigger storylines, don't they?
But I don't want Andrea to die.
No.
So I'm conflicted.
Why doesn't Sophie ever stand up to the people that insult Maddie? Continues Tivor. It was stupid that they stole a car to get to the vets. And how did they know which vet was the one that Deirdre always uses? Maybe there's just a local vet round the corner.
There's always a vet round the corner, isn't there?
But why do they need a car?
Don't ask me.
There's a motor museum in the Lake District, apparently. What were we talking about that for?
About the Woody.
Oh, yeah, the Wood. Oh, maybe they can get it then.
Why not?
And Tibor finishes off saying, not so sure I find Peter sexy when he's sweaty and shaking in prison, but I do love his tattoos, and I do love a man in a black T-shirt.
Just checking, Michael. No, he's wearing a dark navy T-shirt. I'm wearing navy this evening, Tibor. Well, I don't agree about Peter, but I don't think he's really there for my eye candy, is he?
No, I don't think so. He's not your type, is he?
Not really. I like goody two-shoes like you. I don't like bad boys. No. Too much hard work.
See, guys, the nice guys do get the girls sometimes.
Yeah. I wouldn't imagine Peter making me a cup of tea.
No. I think so. Okay, that's it for another episode, isn't it?
You're going to make me a cup of tea now?
We will have tea and we'll have some of those low-fat pancakes with a calorie-free
maple syrup.
Because we were talking about it earlier and that just...
Now we've tipped us over the edge now. We've got to go and have some pancakes.
Post-podcast
if you want
reward.
To email us and tell us off for talking about Northern Ireland and not knowing what we're talking about, or eating low-calorie maple syrup, which is an abomination before the gods of Canada, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com. You can find us at conversationstreet.podbean.com. You can find us on iTunes and review us by just typing in the name. And you can do the same thing on Facebook to find us, but on Twitter you need to look for @conversationstreet.
Yeah. So that's it for another week. See you next time.
And we'll report how much weight we've lost.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.